AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
You probably already know that there are currently over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage. If you're a farmer, that gives you over 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support ethanol. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
Davis is going to be thrilled to know that we're still waiting. Still waiting for a spending bill and still waiting for the COVID-related stimulus package. What we're not waiting on is who will be the next leader at USDA. And this guy wasn't on many short lists.
Live from the dawn of the end of the work week via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, it's our Friday free-for-all. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and we are proud to welcome Representative Cindy Axne. And right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of I'm exasperated newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory. You got to start off my Friday that way, do you?
Yeah,
is that what we got to do?
I do. Yeah. You know, I mean, if I'm going to be in misery waiting for this, you're going to be right there with me. Okay.
You know what? I'm not even going to mention it in the news then. That's it.
Yes, you are. Otherwise, we got to talk about it right now.
Okay. Okay. We'll leave it in the news then. We'll leave it in.
Okay. Oof. Yes. Yeah. So here we are. Did you look at the radar and see how much weather there is across the middle of the country right now?
I did. And then I took the dog out, you know, before the show. Yeah. And to avoid any potential carpet disasters, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
And it's definitely spitting.
Everybody does.
Something's happening. Something's happening out there. It's spitting.
Yeah, it is a. I've been in a kind of a gap in the system all morning between the rain that is where you are and the snow that is maybe 5-10 miles north of me. Mm-hmm. So. And I've seen nothing so far this morning.
Really?
It's kind of weird. It's going around on both sides. So, but it's coming. It's coming. There's no doubt that we are going to see one of the first. You know what? I'm not going to call this a winter storm. It's not like it's bearing down on us and we're going to get slogged in for a while. That just isn't going to happen with this. That's not what it looks like anyway. So. Yeah. Cindy Axne, huh?
Yeah. How do we manage that?
I talked to Apple Joe Sackler.
Has she heard the show before?
I don't know. Does she know who she's on with?
We better step up our game. Best behavior,
right.
Everyone.
She's
best
a
behavior.
Fan of yours, Chip. She's a fan of yours.
Good.
Mm-hmm. I like
yeah,
that.
Right.
Like
all
that.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to the conversation with Representative Cindy Axne. 3rd District of Iowa. If we are looking for some insight into who David Scott is, the new chairman of the House Ag Committee, this is a good spot to start. And that's exactly what we're going to do with Cindy coming up in just a little bit. All right, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, according to the Treasury Department, the U.S. budget deficit widened 25% in October and November from the same period last year to $429 billion, marking a record for the first 2 months of the fiscal year. Increased spending alongside declining revenue during the coronavirus pandemic and the resulting economic downturn pushed the deficit higher. Federal spending rose 9% to $887 billion during October and November from the same time last year, while revenue declined 3% to $457 billion. Economists continue to predict a slow U.S. economic recovery even after a vaccine is made widely available, Chip.
Yeah, this is an issue that is not even kicked down the road. It's punted down the road every time that somebody responsible wants to talk about it. It just gets kicked further and further down the road. And I don't know how we resolve this issue. That's way above my pay scale.
Well, and speaking of kicking it down the road, Senate GOP leaders now say they are unwilling to compromise on the $908 billion COVID aid bill, with assistance to state and local governments and liability protections a major point of contention. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell reportedly sent word to ranking Democrats in the House that he does not see a way forward given those two issues that would be acceptable to GOP members. Here we go again.
We'll get an update from Wiesmeyer on that before we get into the conversation with Representative Axne.
Here's an interesting one. Chinese President Xi Jinping is tightening his grip on businesses in China, saying he wants to increase state control, according to the Wall Street Journal. The government is installing more Communist Party officials inside private firms, starving some of credit and demanding executives tailor their businesses to achieve state goals. The message is not lost on entrepreneurs who are reorienting their businesses to appease the state or giving up on private enterprise altogether, Chip.
Man, there's nothing to say about that. That's just the government taking over. And that's frightening. Frightening.
Yep. And don't get fired up on this, Chip. Just maintain. But I got to bring this up. USDA's World Board again raised its forecast for Chinese corn imports in 2020 and 21, now putting it at 16.5 million tons, up from 13 million tons in November. However, that was not met with a corresponding shift higher in U.S. corn exports, and USDA continues to lag most industry estimates.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah, they did push the Ukrainian corn export up 1.5 million tons, but I don't know where the other 2 million tons are going to come from because I didn't see any major adjustments.
Yep. USDA says it has completed rulemaking on an undue preference rule related to meat packers and their relationships with meat producers. The rule defines criteria for the agency to consider when determining whether an undue or unreasonable preference or advantage has been given to a poultry or livestock grower by a packer, contractor, or dealer. And I got to throw this in. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Director Robert Redfield issued a stark warning about the worsening death toll from the coronavirus on Thursday, saying daily totals within the next 60 to 90 days could show more deaths per day than we had at 9/11 or at Pearl Harbor. Yikes, Chip.
Yeah, it's going to be a difficult period. I don't think there's any question about that. At least that's where the trends are pointing us. All right, thank you, Davis. Let's have a conversation now with Jennifer Scheich, editor of Farm Journal's Pork. How are you this morning, Jennifer?
Oh, I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Good, good, good. So you're working on a series of reports about the National Pork Board export reports on Vietnam and the Philippines. What's going on?
Well, this week the Pork Board shared the results of two studies that they've been working on with JIRA on two emerging markets that we're trying to learn more about, Vietnam and the Philippines. And basically, they've just kind of unveiled quite a bit of information that I think is going to be really valuable to exporters and to pork producers as we try to figure out where else can we position U.S. pork to be able to help our producers be more profitable.
Right. Yeah, and we continue to go out and look to build those markets in these developing markets, and they're very important, aren't they?
They certainly are. I mean, we all know that China has been, you know, has been really good this year. It's hopefully going to be good for us next year, but they're, you know, rebuilding their herd. And so we need to figure out where else we can diversify. And that's been a big concern for U.S. pork producers, you know, reporting to the Pork Board that they want more work done in this area. And so, you know, the Philippines and Vietnam have different strengths and opportunities. And I think one of the key things that I learned from these interviews was just how important it is for us to be able to find out what they want and be able to provide that. It was said that we oftentimes provide what we want to give them just because we want to move that product instead of really listening to what are those products that they want and how do they want those products delivered.
Yep. And important markets, Vietnam, 100 million people, the Philippines, 110 million people. They're markets worth developing. That is for sure. Jennifer, thank you so much. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks. You too.
All right. That's Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. Coming up next, we're going to get the free-for-all going. Wiesmeyer, Haney, and Axne.
Right now, there are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage, waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues, like climate change. But exports are unreliable and have been flat for 30 years. So how do we utilize all that corn while ensuring dependable markets right here at home? POET is working hard to increase the amount of ethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15%. Nationwide, adoption of E15 would generate almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year, which is the equivalent of nearly doubling corn exports by increasing domestic markets that can't be taken away. That's 2 billion really good reasons to tell your legislators and friends to support higher blends of ethanol. It's time for farmers to unite around E15. Biofuels like ethanol are the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture will change the world. Learn more about what you can do to support Nationwide E15 at poet.com/ag.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bayer Plus Rewards, helping make every part of your season more rewarding.
It's Friday, and that means it's time for the free-for-all. Let's get them assembled. Sean Haney, Real Agriculture, Real Ag Radio. How are you, Sean?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic, Chip. Great to be here.
Good, good, good. Jim Wiesmeyer, Pro Farmer Policy Analyst out in D.C.
Hearing
good morning,
that,
Jim.
It.
All
yeah,
right.
Pretty good.
All right. Now, you guys, try to be on your best behavior, okay? We've got a special guest. We've got Representative Cindy Axne representing the 3rd District of Iowa on the free-for-all. Congresswoman Axne, thank you so much for making time for us this morning. How are you?
I'm great, Chip. And I'll tell you, with that intro, I thought I was at a hockey game again, which I sorely missed. So excited
yeah.
to be here.
Don't we all? Don't we all miss that? Good grief. Yeah. How's the weather down your way?
So far, so good. You know, the storm's okay. supposed to be coming in. I hear it's starting to hit Iowa, but I'm clear. We're clear right now, but you know, it's one of those things where we're going to get probably some ice under some snow. And for me, the only thing that's good for is some donuts in a parking lot, you know. but from a safety perspective, I hope people watch what they're doing.
Very good. Excellent. Excellent. Okay. You know the rules, Representative Axne. Jump in when you've got something to say. Jump right in. But I feel like we need to start with Wiesmeyer and get an update on what is going on in the Senate with the spending bill, with the stimulus bill. What's the status, Jim?
Well, we have the Mavericks are using some leverage, you know, both political parties to extend the issue of the stopgap spending bill that the House, passed, I think, on Wednesday, that will carry us through December the 18th. And I really can't rule out a short-term government shutdown at this time. Let's hope it doesn't happen. But eventually, you know, they'll come to, you know, some type of an agreement. And real quick on COVID aid.
Yep.
We continue to have the stalemate, vis-a-vis the liability protection issues and other issues. I think in the final result, hopefully we will at least have a so-called skinny bill doing some aid. The latest proposal has about $13 billion for agriculture. And this is what I want to ask the Congresswoman on the omnibus spending bill that we'll eventually get. I keep on hearing there could be some language that would include some farmer push changes in the CFAP program that many farmers have wanted. I'm not sure of the details.
Okay.
Well, thank you for that great overview. And you're absolutely right. We're trying to get, you know, make sure that we keep government open. The fact that I've taken 5 continuing resolutions in the 23 months that I've been here is unacceptable. And I'm going to tell you what, for the folks that are listening here, we all deserve better than that. And as soon as we get through with shoring up the budget for next year, getting another COVID package through, you know, next year, we have to look at how Congress functions. This is just unacceptable. We'd never teach our kids leadership skills like this or run a business like this. So there's a lot to do. But you're right. We have been consistently trying to make sure that we're shoring up our farmers as they've dealt with blow after blow in these last several years in any bill that we can get. And we'll continue to fight for that. So, you mentioned the Senate bill. It's down from where we'd like to see some support for agriculture and nutrition in the House bill. In a COVID package, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to take what we can get. I think it's important to put something out there, and then we can keep people whole throughout the beginning of the year and then move forward with something that can continue to support people after that.
Jim, are the push changes on CFAP, are they related to livestock, or what are they mainly What's being pushed?
Oh, no, both grains and two. It gets very technical, but these are farmer-pushed, programs in the myriad of the operation of CFAP-2, and that's all I was being able to be told about this. I've received several emails from farmers, with the suggested changes, and this is the good part about our government. When the staff aides hear these things, they try to get it into legislative, language to be more, if you will, pro-farmer friendly.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Hey, on the stimulus package, Representative Axne, I'm going to be sensitive in how I ask this question, but is the House leadership feeling any regret? At one point, the Republicans were offering like $1.8 trillion on this, and here we are under a trillion on it now. Is there any regret for not taking that earlier package?
Well, I would hope that there would be. Unfortunately, I think we should have had this agreement a long time ago, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
And so now we're down to a much lower number. It's always the decisions at the leadership level have always been around state and local funding and, this liability piece that was brought up earlier.
Yep.
And the fact that we've continually gone down in the ability to help American people as those two issues get discussed is really unfortunate, because you're right. We could have had a bigger package, and it could have, I think, given us the opportunity to take care of this and maybe not have to have another package next year. We could have shored some of that up within the budget proposals. So I would hope that they would be a little bit regretful. I'll tell you what, us newcomers, so to speak, we believe that there's always a way to get to some solution. It's why you saw the problem solvers bring a bill. It's why you've seen many of us push for compromise. And I hope that our leadership on both sides starts to understand that those of us who got elected to represent the people, our voices need to be even stronger when it comes to these COVID negotiations.
Right, right. That problem solvers caucus, is it going to gain credibility?
Absolutely. I think that what it showed to the American people is that there are folks on both sides who are ready to come to the table. And it made leadership on the House side, on the Democratic side, stand up and pay attention. Here's your own, caucus members coming together to find a solution. I think it put leadership on notice that if you're not going to take care of this, it's going to be made public, and we're going to find a way to get this done.
Okay. All right. Jim, odds of a shutdown? You mentioned a possibility. What are the odds?
Under 50% at this time. But, these lawmakers who want to be a show me issue, even if we have one, Chip, don't push the panic button, because it'll be done by what, Tuesday? I think the House is signaling we'll come back to some sort of an agreement where they can actually get a vote, without having to bend over for these individual senators, Jeff. But
right.
I can't rule it out. But we've been here before. And like the congresswoman said, this country really needs a return to common sense for the common person. And it's always good to hear, what she has to say and how she says it.
Yeah.
The CNN countdown to shutdown. I think it's going to be tough for a lot of Americans to stomach a shutdown in these times. I think it's bad timing.
I'll tell you what, gentlemen, we're not going to let that happen. We cannot let that happen. It is literally the worst thing that could happen to our country at this point. When we shut down previously, hundreds of thousands of people were put out of work. Adding that on to the economic issues we're facing right now would strap our country and create additional difficulties. So we're prepped and ready to go. We believe that we'll get something done, and that on Wednesday we'll be taking that vote. We hope that vote is a combination of both a COVID package and a budget to get that through. But I can tell you I'm on notice, ready to take the vote, and we feel comfortable we're going to make this happen.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. Let's continue the caucus talk here for a moment. And I want to get your announcement out, Congresswoman Axne. This is pretty exciting stuff. Break the news.
Hey, you're here, and you're hearing it first. This is very exciting. I will officially be one of the co-chairs of the House Biofuels Caucus in the next Congress. And I am so thrilled. You know, I've tried to be a champion for Iowa and biofuels in general, and we've got to end this renewable fuel standard. And the last 4 years of all those illegal waivers, which have greatly hurt the bottom line for our producers. So I am really excited to be at a leadership position to make sure that we get that demand back for our farmers and we help our rural community. So it's very exciting.
Now, those that oppose the RFS, when they saw you appointed to this caucus, that had to raise their attention, because I would guess that it might be a little concerning for them to have someone as outspoken as you are about biofuels on that caucus.
Absolutely. And I can't wait to use my voice on that. I told folks ages ago, you know, if you want somebody in your corner, I'm kind of the person you want. I've got sharp elbows when it comes to doing what's right. For any of you who still remember girls 6-on-6 basketball here in Iowa, I was a post guard. Nothing got by me. So ready to use those sharp elbows to get this done. Listen, I'm just sick and tired of seeing it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Excellent. We've got to take a break. We're coming up against it. We've got the free-for-all going on today's AgriTalk.
It starts with a plan. That's why America's Conservation Ag Movement is inviting you to get your farm business ready for 2021 with a free resource stewardship planning guide. Get your free guide today at agweb.com/ACAM.
There are over 2 billion bushels of surplus corn in storage, waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues, like climate change. Moving from 10 to 15% ethanol nationwide would result in almost 2 billion bushels of new domestic corn demand each year. That means nearly eliminating the need for corn exports by ensuring dependable markets right here at home while driving commodity prices to profitable levels. Biofuels are the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture can change the world. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady joins us now. I'm laughing because I'm looking at wheat. This market has just decided it's run out of selling.
Yeah, kaboom. Here we go. You know, third day in a row here with good gains and strong finish to the week if we can hold on here. You know, the Russian talk of Russian export taxes yesterday got us going, and follow through today, you know, sounds like it might be about 2,000 rubles, about $27 a ton or 75 cents a bushel, about equivalent, and that's got the market excited. Pushed above yesterday's highs, and you get some technical-based buying in there as well, and you end up with double-digit gains here in the winter wheat contracts.
27 bucks a ton is not insignificant. That will move some demand around the world, no question about it. Take us into the soy complex. What you got going?
Well, we had a daily meal sale to the Philippines this morning, so the meal market's being strengthened by that. Soybeans showing some decent gains. It sounds like the two-week forecast for Brazil is rather wet, but it's hot and dry for Argentina, and so that's giving us a little bit of fundamental support. And then the corn market, it's being supported by the strength that we talked about in wheat and also in the soy complex.
Yeah, just fractional gains in the corn market right now. Cattle complex trading higher.
Yeah, good strong finish to the week. It started out ugly in the cattle market this week and looks like it's going to finish up on a positive note. Moderate to strong gains across both live cattle and feeder cattle here mid-morning. The same can't be said for the hog market, which is under some pressure, especially in the back end of the market.
Got to be some concerns about exports to China going forward. Thanks, Brian. Have a good weekend. Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by Bayer Plus Rewards, helping make every part of your season more rewarding.
There we go. Got Haney's playlist going again. Welcome back to AgriTalk. Talk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We've got a special free-for-all going today. Pro Farmer Policy Analyst Jim Wiesmeyer, Real Agriculture Sean Haney, and Representative Cindy Axne from the 3rd District of Iowa. And I want to go right back to Congresswoman Axne on this one. The Department of Justice says the Supreme Court should not review the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals decision that found three small refinery exemptions, SREs, granted regarding the RFS were invalid as they were not continuous. That's got to be good news for the RFS, right?
This is fantastic, and I completely agree with their, what I will call, very well-reasoned position. Very, very good news for us.
Yeah. Jim, the dashboard still had, like, there was still, like, 19 SREs being considered for that, what was it, 2011 to 2017 time period. That should give EPA, this should give EPA and Wheeler all the, all the ammo they need to just throw those requests out, right?
You would hope, but we don't know whether they're just going to punt all these, you know, sensitive issues to the incoming administration or not.
They can't.
Let me poke in there a little bit. What I can tell you is that President-elect Biden absolutely knows the importance of the RFS. We've had these conversations. I'm in conversations with not just the president-elect, but also with his team on a consistent basis about the importance of the RFS, and he is committed to upholding the law. So, listen, I'm excited about him coming in and understanding the importance of upholding this law for our farmers, and I'm going to continue to fight, and in particular with my new role, to make sure that we push this and get this back in place, and, you know, we get those gallons back to where they were supposed to be.
Yeah.
So I think we've got a champion in the White House, guys.
Okay. Are we going to have a champion in, at EPA, do you think? Have there been any hints?
I have, you know, no hints yet. I'll tell you, excited about the ag hints, though, with Governor Vilsack. Listen, what I know about President-elect Biden and having spent time with him is that this is a man who wants to get things done. And he understands that we've got to put people in the positions of those directing those departments that actually believe in the mission of those departments. And the EPA certainly believes in the mission of renewable fuels. And therefore, I know Vice President Biden will put somebody in place that will push this agenda. He knows how important it is.
Okay. All right. I want to talk about Vilsack in a moment, but I want to start with the House Ag Committee and new chairman David Scott, kind of an unknown to a lot of us here in the Midwest, Congresswoman. What do we need to know about David Scott?
Well, first and foremost, I'm really thrilled that Representative Scott will be our next chairman. And first and foremost, he's just a good man, a good person. So I look forward to serving with him. But I can tell you his priorities as chair are continuing to transition away from fossil fuels, so we like that, while creating jobs and opportunities through biofuels. So this is a really important agenda for him. He wants to expand new markets for small and mid-sized farmers, and he wants to ensure food security. So, you know, this is a gentleman who grew up on a farm. You know, his grandparents, his family's farmed for generations, and he understands the complexities. He represents an agriculture community, and he understands the issues related to market transparency as well. We both sit on Financial Services Committee, and we have an opportunity to work together there. And I think that, you know, he and I have even brought, even though CFTC certainly falls under the agriculture sector, that, you know, we got to remember that we've got to think holistically about how that functions. And, you know, I think that both he and I, with our ability to look at this from a financial perspective as well, and markets and transparency, he's going to be great in this job, and I'm looking forward to it.
Good, good. Ranking member is going to be Glenn G.T. Thompson. He's been on AgriTalk before. It sounds like G.T. and Chairman Scott will work well together, don't you think?
Well, I certainly think so. And I'll be honest, I think Chairman Scott works well with anybody. He's genuinely caring, and he'll listen and he'll work with people. And honestly, of anything that gets done in D.C., I've noticed that agriculture tends to be one of our most bipartisan areas.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Good, good, good. Tom Vilsack. Yes, that Tom Vilsack is coming back to USDA. Jim, wasn't on very many short lists.
No, which again tells me not to get into these parlor games
too early.
But you know, in retrospect, it does make a lot of sense. Now, since then, I've talked to the Biden people and Vilsack's people, and he has a long time relationship, you know, with the incoming president and their wives as well. And so what I was told is his portfolio, Chip, is going to go beyond agriculture. He'll be a kitchen cabinet advisor to the president. And that speaks very well of Tom Vilsack.
Yeah, certainly does. You've got to be excited about it, Congresswoman.
Well, I'm thrilled. Tom Vilsack's experience speaks for itself, and I'm someone whose first job at the state of Iowa was in the Vilsack administration. So I've seen his commitment to good government and support for the people he serves up close. And I know that it's a really good choice for our family farmers and our ag communities as we, you know, face these difficult challenges. And I appreciate you bringing up his wife, Christy. They've both been dedicated public servants. Yeah. They certainly understand rural America. They're from rural America. Yeah. And yeah. I think Iowa knows we're going to have a key ally. And boy, am I excited, because I've got a relationship with him. And that means we're going to have a big seat at the table here in Iowa.
Excellent. Haney, the move from U.S. Dairy Export Council, or from USDA to Export Council back to USDA. What's the Canadian perspective on this one?
Well, if you're Canadian dairy, you look at it. This is the Darth Vader of the Canadian dairy system. I think it's interesting. The expanded portfolio kind of, or expanded responsibilities, makes sense because, you know, I was kind of doing some research on Secretary Vilsack. I remember was reminded of a Washington Post story that he actually tried to step down during the Obama administration and say, you know, my work is done here. So it's interesting that he is coming back for another round. I actually talked to former federal ag minister Jerry Ritz in Canada here. He worked a lot with Vilsack. They disagreed on many things, such as M-Cool, for example, and of course, fighting over supply management. But he did say that Tom was always very personable, pragmatic, and extremely political. We were always able to discuss the most troubling issues and still remain friends, which I think is a pretty good shout out for the secretary who is returning. And yes, he knows the dairy file very, very well. And of course, we saw this week the filing over the Canadian allocation of TRQs, which it was expected.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it was from Radio Iowa's OK Henderson tweeted out something from like 2007 where Secretary Vilsack said, hey, the job at USDA is my dream job. So how do you, you know, when you know that you, when your dream job has got a finite period of time that you can serve in it under an administration, if you're asked to do your dream job a second time for a second administration, Jim, don't you do it?
Oh, yeah. And I remember him saying that when he was here, you know, for the first 8 years. But I think what helped bring him back, not only the close relationship with the Bidens, but the movement clearly in the Biden administration to the climate change area. And he thinks he can play a role there, hopefully in a pragmatic way for the ag sector.
Okay. Okay, excellent. Congresswoman Axne is going to be leaving us after this segment here. So I've got to ask. Your priority list, Cindy, what does it look like?
Well, first and foremost, to make sure that we shore up our farmers and get this renewable fuel standards moving forward in the right direction. Absolutely to open up new trade opportunities for our farmers. And then to the point about climate, ensuring that we work with our farmers to move towards a more sustainable future. Listen, you know, we've got to really address the issue of the nutrients in our soil. We know that climate will be something that's going to be on the agenda. I'm glad to see that Governor Vilsack certainly understands that, and so does the Biden administration. And what I really like is that our message has got through, that agriculture can be a key player in that, and we can benefit from it as well. So, you know, trade, sustainability, new markets, and shoring up the RFS will be key priorities. And then don't forget, I'm going to be really focused on market transparency. We've seen some big issues with our cattle and as a result of COVID, and we've got to make sure that we're fixing that so that we don't see a downturn again should something occur that hurts that market for our farmers and our producers.
Excellent. Excellent. We got about 45 seconds. Jim, anything else for Representative Axne?
Well, relative to the Renewable Fuel Standard Program, with the authorization, quote, ending after 2022, don't you think the debate should begin next year on, you know, what's the future of the RFS and to reform it to make sure it's a viable program for the future?
Absolutely. Time comes around way too quickly. You know, we need to solidify this in 2021 and make sure that it's not going to be an issue. So I couldn't agree with you more. I want to see this done as quickly as possible so that as we move down the road, you know, we're securing that. And then we've got the Farm Bill coming up. So we'll be talking about that starting in 2022 probably as well. So a lot of stuff on the docket, and we've got to make sure that we've got all of our ducks in a row to protect ag.
Representative Axne, you're welcome back on the free-for-all anytime you want on. Just give us a call.
Love it. Great time here today, guys. Really appreciate it. Happy holidays and Merry Christmas to everybody.
Thank you. Same to you. Same to you. That is Congresswoman Cindy Axne, 3rd District of Iowa. Wiesmeyer and Haney will be back to wrap up the free-for-all.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to the free-for-all. We've got Wiesmeyer and Haney with us. We're going to wrap this thing up. It was fun having Representative Cindy Axne, 3rd District of Iowa, on the show today. Jim, she gave us some, of course, I mean, we should figure that she's going to be optimistic about the new Ag Committee Chairman, David Scott, out of Georgia. But it does sound encouraging that he's going to be, he's going to very much have production agriculture in mind, is what it sounds like to me.
Absolutely. And what we heard from her is she's quite articulate. She's passionate, which is always good. And three, I think we're hearing the female version of Colin Peterson.
Okay. I like that. I like that comparison. Kind of a down the middle, leaning to the right or the left.
Yes. does that make sense? It's hard to tell. If you would not know if she was a Democrat, you wouldn't have guessed it.
Yeah,
you know, which I think is right. It's a good mark, because whether you're Republican or Democrat, she is, I think, you know, citizen oriented first, and that's always good as a lawmaker.
Yeah. Amen. Amen to that.
Full disclosure: I had to look, and I did.
Yeah,
absolutely impressed. And I don't care, well, Democrat, Republican. She knows her stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, to be honest with you, I don't know if people have noticed this or not, but on AgriTalk, when I have a lawmaker on, I never label them as a Democrat or Republican. I just don't do it. And I want people to have the reaction that you just had, Sean. That's the reaction that I'm looking for. I want them to have to look it up and figure out, now, are they, you know, sometimes it's going to be obvious. Sometimes it's just going to be blatantly obvious. I get that. That's fine. If it is, okay. But when you get a situation like we've got with Congresswoman Axne, where you have to think, wait a second, which party is she representing? And you have to go and look it up, because it just makes sense from a point of, you know, from a policy point of view. That is outstanding. I love that.
Well,
I love that.
Well, and I'm coming from the, you know, outside here a little bit, but, you know, I'll say this is that, you know, when you have somebody that can speak to a number of different rural-based issues with that kind of snap and knowledge and being quick and to the point, consider yourselves lucky, because I'll be honest, we do not see that in Canada as much, you know, of course, like the ag critic might, but if you talk to a random MP from a rural area, I don't think it comes with that kind of quality. So I think, you know, it's important to point that out.
Right, right. Okay, I got this from Dal. And, Jim, I'll let you react to it. New Secretary of Ag is an Obama hack.
Too strong, I think. Of course, he's a spokesman for Obama, and he believed in him because he worked for him 8 years. He did learn from some initial mistakes, and I remember Pro Farmer was quite hard on him his first year. And anyone who can grow in any job, you have to compliment. And I think he did learn, you know, from that. Yeah. And the biggest point, Chip, is he's a consensus builder. He'll bring in the different commodity groups and national organizations to seek a consensus. So the opportunity is there for progress.
Yeah, yeah, that. The editor of Pro Farmer at the time that Pro Farmer was hard on Vilsack was me. And I was very disappointed in his first year. If you'll remember, it was all about farmers markets. And not that there's anything wrong with farmers markets, but it was all about farmers markets. And it was all about nutrition. And production agriculture was left out. And by the time he was done, I was a fan. I don't say that about many Republicans, about many Democrats, but I was not a fan at the start. And by the time he was done, I was a fan.
Well, so, but look now, look who's upset now. I think it's a bit of a statement by President-elect Biden on some of these key positions are not going to be taken over by certain niche parts of the party here. Right. We have environmental activists very upset.
Right.
And I just think it's a win for being a moderate, yeah. I guess, yeah. Or centrist,
and
I guess.
One of the reasons that there's some pushback from the environmental side is because, as far as I know, Secretary Vilsack he trusts the science that is in the genetics that is built into the seed that makes it more efficient to do what you do out in the field. He's a believer in that science, and some of the environmental groups out there are not believers in that science. So I think we're going to have to reserve judgment. It's 4 years later. If he changed as much as he did in his first 8 years as USDA secretary, takes a 4-year break, it's going to be interesting to see what he does when he restarts the effort, Jim.
And also his working with Congress. He's got experience there now, and he knows the back alleys in this town, and that's one of the key ingredients to get things done.
Yep. And it'll be round two for him with implementation of a new farm bill. I can't wait to get him on and have a conversation with him, because I'd be curious what he thinks of the agency that he left 4 years ago. You know, compare it 4 years ago to today, and what does he think of the agency? Is it a reclamation project?
Yes, watch the people he brings in. I think it'll be key. Yeah. Who's deputy secretary? Who are those undersecretaries? I think that'll be his theme that you'll have to look out for, Chip.
Right. Right. Okay, Haney, we've got just a little bit of time here, but you need to remind us of the 2-year anniversary and what's going on there.
Yeah, it's the 2-year anniversary of the two Michaels, as we refer to them in Canada, that were detained in China. You know, they're in a 3-meter by 3-meter cell, each of them, 24-hour light, you know, just breaking of hope. There's been a lot of coverage up here. Of course, that all has to do with the Huawei CFO arrest and retaliation. The U.S. is negotiating with China, but I heard John Bolton on Canadian TV this week say he doesn't really take those negotiations seriously because she will never admit wrongdoing. So we're following that story very closely.
Absolutely. Gentlemen, I'm on vacation next week. Have a fun free-for-all next Friday, and have a good weekend, all right?
Sure.
Absolutely.
All right, that is Pro Farmer policy analyst Jim Wiesmeyer and Real Agriculture Sean Haney. Come back this afternoon. We're going to have a conversation with Greg McBride from Allendale. And Monday morning, like I said, it's vacation time, but Davis will be here with Tyne Morgan.